So we're going to do some walking on the road to Emmaus. We're going to ask you to get involved today. We're going to do some practical things. We're going to use our mindfulness practices a little bit today, or at least kind of get you aware of some of them. And we're just going to look at who Jesus is in some new ways. So I want to start with walking. Walking is an interesting thing. It's something we don't do much of anymore for necessity's sake. When we say I'm going for a walk, it's almost always a leisure activity. And so what that means is we go through life at the speed of a car, which for some of us is faster than others. But we don't take the time to actually walk. We don't have to, so why would we? Back in the early 80s, I spent a summer helping start a church in Negril, Jamaica. And we stayed in this little guest house, and the post office was about half a mile away. Nothing was delivered. You had to go to the post office. And the first few days, it was our begrudging activity to get to the post office. And as we got to know the community, we found that the walk to the post office became one of our primary activities. It got where it was taking us almost 2 hours to walk the half mile, because you got to know the shop owners and you got to know the people that were going around. We saw one little 13-year-old guy on a bicycle just whipping back and forth, and we thought, man, this kid was energetic, until we found out that in the top of his baseball cap were the biggest stashes of ganja that you could get inside a baseball hat. And we learned that he was the courier for some of the primary movers and shakers in the town, and Brian ended up being one of the people we baptized the last week we were there, because we were walking, and so we encountered him. We don't do that much in our society. So I want you to just kind of take a minute to consider what walking would feel like for you. We're going to do this in stages to kind of slow down. First of all, I want you to think, if you have a place, and you may want to close your eyes, you don't have to, but if you are going to go for a walk, where is that place that you would go for that walk? And just kind of visualize yourself there. I know for several of you, there's going to be at least one dog along on the journey. For some of you, more than one. And just put yourself there for a minute. And now let's go mindful for a minute. Notice how your body functions as you walk. And I mean right down to how your knees bend, how your feet hit the ground. How does your breath feel? As you start to actually visualize your body moving, you should feel your own body in this moment kind of calm down a little bit, as you become aware of those things. And now I want you to practice what A.W. Tozer used to call sanctified imagination. We sometimes call it Lectio Divina here. But put yourself on the Emmaus Road. What are you hearing? What are you seeing? What are you feeling? What smells might there be? Do you encounter anybody else? There's you and one other person, and you're both feeling lots of despair, but also uncertainty, because apparently Jesus is risen, but nobody really knows what to do with that. So imagine that moment, and then suddenly there's a third party involved in the walk. There's a slowness to this that we don't experience very much in our lives. We're all about haste and timing and meetings and appointments. So now you're walking with him, and I want you to ask yourselves a couple of questions. Put Jesus in your situation now. And just take a minute and ask yourself these two things. First of all, what might be some times, let's say in the past week or 2 weeks, when you were moving so quickly that you missed seeing Jesus when he was walking with you in a situation? Or even if he wanted to let you know that he was, he couldn't catch up with you. What might that situation look like for you? And now ask yourself this, and you might even want to turn this into a moment of prayer. What are some places in your life right now where it would be helpful if you would slow down so you could become aware that Jesus is walking with you? Or maybe a situation that you really need to know that he's in that situation with you, walking with you in the moment. You see, walking is part of what we do, but the disciples weren't just walking. Jesus started talking, and so they had to listen. Listening is an interesting art form in our society. We used this quote last summer. I absolutely love it. I asked Rhonda to read it. This is from Henry Nouwen on listening as spiritual hospitality. So that is what we kind of keep out there in front of us as a goal of listening. It's worksheet time. On your tables, we have a sheet that on one side is a reading on obstacles to listening. And on the other side is a little self-assessment and a sort of goal or direction setting for the week or two ahead. So we're going to give you about 5 minutes, read through the obstacles, and then just kind of check out the questions on the other side and be as honest with yourself as you can and just see how this goes. If you do happen to get a dud pen, there are more in the back, so we can work on that if we need to. Yes, yes, thank you. Don't put it back in the basket. No, you only get one chance at these answers. you a couple more minutes. I definitely encourage you to look at the things that you can maybe think about dealing with this next week, right at the bottom of the second page. Now we're going to start with Shane up here in the front corner. We're going to have everybody read your answers, and we'll all decide if we agree with you or not. Just kidding. Pardon me? Oh, depends on who's speaking. Why don't you take a minute? Let's just stand up. We're just going to take a two-minute break here. I noticed that Norm and Peggy look like Jesus has been walking with them on the beach this week. I also saw Milton's are in Florida, and Parton's are on an island off the coast of Honduras. So our church gets around. Jesus is on a lot of beaches today. So glad to have you guys back, though. You look good, man. Right. Okay. Good to know. Good grief. Yeah, wow. All right, that's it. You can sit down. That's just a stretch minute. They walked with Jesus. They heard what he was saying. He took them through the entire Old Testament and everything that pointed to him, and they were probably not even fully aware just how blown away they were in the moment. But they knew they didn't want it to be over just yet. So they went in and eat with them. Eating is an interesting thing. It's something we have to do pretty much every day or thereabouts. And when we do eat, there is probably no act that shows us the place that God plays in seemingly mundane acts. We kind of decided to look at this in a slightly different way this morning. A lot of times we start with food, and as if we mindfully think about what we're eating, how it's gotten there, who prepared it, who picked it, who raised it, it begins to take our minds into a whole lot of different places. Shane had a book on eating, and it's got like tons of prayers in it. So on your table, the other sheet of paper has some really interesting prayers. Some are Jewish, some are Armenian, some are Nicaraguan. There's one British one. There's just all kinds of different prayers. I want you to take a few minutes and allow the way you view God's work in the mundane things just to open up a little bit. As you read through some of these, suddenly you're thinking about justice, you're thinking about the environment, you're thinking about crops, you're thinking about workers' rights, all because you mindfully take a moment to consider how you think about eating. So just take a couple minutes. I won't tell you which one's my favorite. but see if one of them sort of resonates with you, maybe in a special way. My personal favorite was, there is nothing so savory or sweet. So these guys are in the middle of a meal, and all of a sudden they realize who's been walking with them. Only now everything is really, really different, because this is no longer Jesus, the teacher or the prophet or the carpenter's son from. He is the risen and resurrected Christ. And so suddenly everything looks and seems completely different. A phrase that Shane uses a lot around here is, what you focus on determines what you miss. And I would say that that is probably not as true anywhere as it is when we're talking about our perspective of who Jesus is. Who is he for us today? We live in a society that loves to market things, that loves to commercialize things. Last Monday, I was having lunch with one of the leaders of the Carmel Mosque. And he said to me, I need to ask you, how do the Easter eggs tie into the resurrection of Jesus? And I said, they really don't. That's a pagan tradition that's been around for hundreds of years, got nothing to do with the resurrection, but boy, the stores love it. And he was like, really? Nothing? Not even? And I'm like, got nothing for you. If you want to go new life, you can, but search the scriptures, you won't find it. And so a lot of times we're given this image that's all marketed up and made to get you to Target or Walmart or wherever to do whatever you're supposed to do and buy. But Jesus is becoming, he has become something much, much bigger. And what we focus on determines what we miss. And if we continuously revert back to who Jesus was, the prophet, the teacher, when I was a kid, boy, this is going to date me. I'm expecting you to join with me, Matt. There was a song that was very well known. Put your hand in the hand of the man who stilled the waters. Put your hand in the hand of the man who calmed the sea. And on it went. And it was very 70s. Jesus is your best friend kind of stuff. I remember a choir came to our church and we were young and we had the record album and we got all the choir members to sign it. And one of the girls in the choir wrote, God is groovy. And I never forgot that. And I kind of thought that epitomizes the 70s. God, hey, yeah, exactly. But he's so much bigger now. Shane began to open this up a little bit, Easter, that Christ is now in everything, all things together. He is in all things. He's working to bring all things to this fullness, into this oneness and this unity. I got to be honest, that sounds almost new agey to us a little bit. And it sounds like, well, this isn't something we hear a lot. Jesus is risen, he's gone, and he's at the right hand of the Father. How can he be in everything and everywhere? And I started to think about this. How do we begin to really see this? And I kind of went hunting. And I found a few things. In the second century, Irenaeus said it this way. Probably our first really good theologian. He said his wisdom is shown in his having made created things part of one harmonious and consistent whole. And those things which through his supereminent kindness receive growth and a long period of existence do reflect the glory of the uncreated one, of that God who bestows what is good ungrudgingly. And actually, this quote was about this big, but I didn't want to spend all day reading Irenaeus because he uses words like supereminent a lot. And it would have got a little tough to keep with it. But I want you to look at that first phrase. His wisdom is shown in his having made created things part of one harmonious and consistent whole. Now, it's the second century. 1,000 years later, Aquinas shows up. Thomas Aquinas, who many, certainly in the Catholic world, would consider the greatest theologian of all time. And this isn't an exact quote, again, because Aquinas, you have to put like 4 pages to get his context. But one guy broke it down and put it this way. He said, Thomas Aquinas asks, in what sense God is in all things? He then answers his own question. God is in all things, first of all, by his power, because he upholds all things by the word of his power. Then he says he is not in all things at a distance, because there is no distance in God. He is therefore in all things by his presence. He then says that he is not present in all things by a part of himself, because there are no parts in God. Therefore, he is in all things by his essence. In other words, God, our Creator, is in every part and subparticle of matter and in every living thing and every human being by his very essence. God permeates this world in which we live. The Trinity is in all creation, everything. This cosmic dance is going on in all around us, in everybody. But we hear this kind of stuff and a word pops up that a lot of us grew up with and all we know is we're supposed to stay a really long way away from it. The word pantheism. We don't like pantheism because it says God is everything and everything is God. But what a lot of these writers are talking about is not pantheism, it's panentheism, which is God is everything and everything is in God. Paul the Apostle in Acts 18 says, in him we live and move and have our being. Think about how big that is, about how that has him permeating everything. If in him we live and move and have our very being. Everything that's going on in us is in that place. And he in us and in those around us. And this is something God calls us to see. Just real quickly, listen to a couple of these early mystics from the middle centuries, actually. John of the Cross put it this way, my beloved is in the mountains and lonely wooded valley, strange islands and the whistling of love-stirring breezes, the tranquil night, on silent solitude, the supper that refreshes. Meister Eckhart said, God created all things in such a way that they are not outside himself as ignorant, falsely, and flow outward, but nonetheless remain within God. Mechthild of Magdeburg was a female mystic in the middle centuries who kind of led the way for a lot of the women that would follow afterwards. And she said this, the day of my spiritual awakening was the day that I saw and knew that I saw God. And of Norwich says, we are in God who we do not see is in us. Throughout the history of the church, it seems like when this revelation hits somebody, there's like this whole new level of understanding. It's almost like their eyes are open. And they begin to see. Jesus himself kind of gave us this idea, whatever you have done to one of the least of these, you've done it unto me. And we kind of quote that when we're getting everybody excited about putting together food kits for the homeless or something like that. But the reality is, this is who Jesus is. And when we encounter anyone, we are encountering him in some way. And it's actually a really powerful thing. Then if we jump up to the 21st century, Jürgen Moltmann, who is now 93 years old and still kicking, kind of gives us a future understanding of where this is eventually going to go. And he says, reconciled through his death and gathered up into his rebirth, all created being is drawn into the peace of the new community of creation. There the self-isolation of individual creatures ends. There all acts of violence end. There ends injustice. There ends the power of death. Mutual destruction is replaced by a community of peace in which all created beings are there for one another, with one another, and in one another, and through the interchange of their energies, keep one another in life, for one another, and together. Christ is called the head of this new community of creation because in him the whole fullness of the Godhead dwells bodily, and through him the Shekinah overflows into the new fellowship of creation, so that with Orthodox theology we can truly talk about a deification of the cosmos. I love that. Christ's resurrection is deifying everything. Every single aspect of the world. Now, are we there yet? Obviously not. We still encounter violence. We still encounter these things. But it's kind of this sense of already not yet. But Christ has opened the way. And as we see him in this reality, we begin to realize the vastness of who he is. And Paul, in one of my favorite passages in Colossians, says, for by him all things were created, and in him all things hold together. The risen Christ is not even just a guy who's risen from the dead, who's now all beaming and can disappear and walk through walls and stuff. He is what a lot of the writers call the cosmic or universal Christ, filling all things with himself. And as we begin to see that, there is a realization that unlocks all kinds of things around us. It unlocks how we begin to see other people. Do we see, like Kyle spoke a few weeks ago for a few minutes about it, recognizing the divine spark in everyone we encounter, and how does that alter the way you interact with that person? How does it impact the way you see the world? How does it impact the way you see your neighbors, the people that aren't like you? Are they filled with, do they have this image of Christ? Is there a piece of Christ that you encounter every time you encounter them? How might it impact the way you see all of nature? Maybe you give a little more attention to the bird song in the morning. The Celtics used to be real big about the fact that there could be something going on there that you need to hear. And how might it impact the way you see yourself and your place in God's world? I want us to just take a minute. Because when we come to the table, we're encountering this Christ. We're encountering this living Jesus. I was at a church for 4 or 5 years out on the west side of town. And they had communion every week, and I thought that was pretty good. But every week, they read the exact same scripture. They said the exact same words, and they said, this is for us to remember what Jesus did for us 2,000 years ago. But I would suggest to you that it's not just an act of remembrance, but that every time we encounter these simple emblems of bread and wine, we are having an encounter with Christ that is no less real than the encounter that the disciples in Emmaus had. Truly, we encounter the living Christ, what many call the real presence, in that moment when by faith we take him, we ingest, think of this, we ingest the Lord of the universe in this seemingly simple act. This is why I think we make such a big deal of weekly gathering. Other than the fact that we all like to hang out, it's the fact that we are encountering something beyond what we can even conceive. So I'd ask you to just take a moment and consider, how does your vision of Christ need to be renewed? How does it need to be expanded? How do you see Jesus today? And kind of prepare yourself for this time of the bread and the wine. Today, how will you encounter him? How will you let him encounter you? Just take a minute.